This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. This year's Democratic National Convention promised to be an extravaganza here in Milwaukee. Instead, due to the coronavirus pandemic, the convention was almost entirely virtual, with speakers joining in from places around the country. It was a real letdown for the city of Milwaukee, but the convention was still historic in many ways. The virtual conference allowed a wide swath of Americans to participate in a convention which can sometimes feel exclusive or elitist. Although people were socially distanced around the country, in some ways the convention felt less isolated than it had ever been before. I'm joined now by political commentator Mordecai Lee to talk about the highlights of this year's DNC and what it could mean for the November election. Mordecai, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So this was a really historic Democratic National Convention. You know, we've never seen anything like it. We may never again. What were your thoughts on how it went overall?
Well, in advance of it, I was afraid it would be a really big dud, simply because what are they going to do? They're going to have an empty room. They're not going to have people cheering. How do you have a convention without sort of people? And I think they sort of found a pretty good way to do it, so good that I think the Republicans might be tempted to do it, and that's that they did a mix of standard stuff, which is sort of politicians and celebrities looking into the camera. And the other part of it was highly edited taped events and taped moments that were really sort of sewn together in a very effective way. I was really impressed by it being, I guess you'd call it, good television. The evening went fast. And so they alternated between the two, between the sort of stop motion politician looking into the camera versus these edited segments, often with what we would call regular people, in other words, not professional politicians. And that sort of worked. Paradoxically, the traditional speaking opportunities weren't as good as the edited opportunities. And it was the edited opportunities that really, I think, gave it momentum and made it work. You know, maybe what this was sort of, searching through the dark to figure out how do you do a convention without people. And maybe the lesson is really that conventions were no longer working. You know, having somebody standing in a hall, booming out their voice with oratorical flourishes to 10,000 people, that just doesn't work anymore. And certainly conventions don't work anymore in their original political purpose, which was to select a nominee. You have to go back to 1960 when John F. Kennedy thought he was the leader, but it was a contested convention, and he didn't win until Wyoming cast its vote, Wyoming being the last state. So if conventions no longer have their original purpose, and for the last sort of 30 years we've been seeing conventions that are sort of PR, highly choreographed events, maybe this is the moment where we pivot and say, let's just do virtual conventions so that parties can talk to the people, but not have any of this extraneous stuff that doesn't work anymore.
So one of the things that I've seen a lot of analysts talking about with the convention is essentially the message that it's trying to put out there, which I think is always a conversation with conventions. It seemed like, you know, to this point, the big talking point was empathy. What did you think was the big talking point, the big message that came across in this convention?
Well, the convention was trying to hit a couple of different marks, because the Biden campaign is trying to hit a couple of different constituencies. On the one hand, they were trying to say, we're left of center. We're the guys that Bernie Bros now like. And so they had sections naturally on George Floyd. They had sections on gun violence, which sort of and gun laws, which sort of surprised me because that can be a hot button issue for some people. So they were, on the one hand, saying, yeah, we're the progressive Democratic Party. On the other hand, they were saying, those of you who are conservative, those of you who have voted all your lives for a Republican, those of you who 4 years ago voted for Trump, here's the case not to do it. And now those are very different messages in very different constituencies. And so they were trying to tread lightly that this wasn't a four-day hysterical kind of we hate Trump, we hate Trump. They were really trying to develop it in a much softer kind of way.
So let's get into some of these speeches. To start here, what were some of the most impactful speeches of the convention in your view?
I think if we're going to sort of grade moments, and I guess as a professor emeritus, I just sort of habitually grade things. But if we're going to grade moments, I think we have to separate between the big name looking into the camera versus the anonymous citizen looking into the camera. And if we're going for the traditional political speeches, I would say that Michelle Obama and Barack Obama were the two best features of the convention. Michelle Obama looks in the camera and she says, I hate politics. And then she proceeded sort of to make the case for those of you out there who really don't like politics, here's the case to vote for Joe Biden. I thought that was tremendously effective. And then Barack Obama, looking into the camera, said explicitly, I want to talk to you who is undecided who to vote for, or you who sometimes just doesn't vote because you really sort of have given up on the system. I thought that was very powerful because he was talking to them. He didn't need to talk to people who reflexively vote Democratic. And so between the two of them, Michelle Obama and Barack Obama, perhaps coincidentally, we're talking to very specific audiences that are absolutely necessary if Joe Biden is going to win in the fall. So those two speakers really, I thought, were very powerful. Now, if we want to talk about powerful moments, not by sort of these big names, then it seems to me that the convention had a couple of them. The top one would be Gabby Giffords, the congresswoman from Arizona who got shot, where she said, I had to learn words, and now I'm sort of talking to you in words, and I hope you'll listen to me. I thought that was extremely moving. And then there were other sort of regular person kind of things. George Floyd's family, I thought, was good. The roll call was very good. But probably the line that I think will stay with people was the woman who said that her father died from the pandemic, from COVID. And she said, and my father was a Republican, and that my, and then she had a line, it was the line of all lines for this convention, at least.
Yeah, Christian, I believe her name is Christian Urquiza, and the line, I think, was, my father's only pre-existing condition was trusting Trump.
That might end up being a 30-second commercial that we're going to be seeing between now and November.
Yeah. Of course, you know, this is a convention that was theoretically rooted in Milwaukee, although I think the fireworks display last night might have disproven that. But there were a lot of Wisconsin politicians who were featured during this convention. What did you think of their performances?
I think this is hard to do. And for people who have national experience, like the Obamas or Joe Biden, I think this was sort of where they felt comfortable. For Wisconsin politicians, sort of this was a bit new. This was a bit different. They weren't quite as sure-footed. I thought that Senator Baldwin did well. I thought that Gwen Moore's welcome to Milwaukee, while quite enthusiastic, was nonetheless a way to emphasize this is a Milwaukee convention. Some of the others I don't think quite hit the mark.
Yeah. Now, getting to the candidate himself, Joe Biden, there have been concerns about Biden as a candidate. Do you think his speech and his presence overall at the convention alleviated some of those fears?
Well, again, I guess reflexively being a professor, I think the grade that he earned from his acceptance speech is sort of like a B or maybe a B plus, because the speech really had two different notes. The first note, the first half of the speech was, he was sort of giving his stump speech and he was doing his applause lines and he really has them well honed. But when you're not in front of a live audience and you give a line that works with the public at large and it's in a pause line, there was no pause. There was no audience to applaud it. And so he was orating in a way that really sort of didn't work for not having an audience. And then I noticed that his tone really shifted about the middle of the speech when he started talking about his family tragedies and he started talking about much more personal things. He really shifted from orating, that sort of doesn't work on TV in this kind of context, to conversation. In other words, that he's looking, he's in your living room, he's talking to you, he's chatting with you. He really sort of lowered the tone and I think made it much more effective. And it made me think of sort of the model that all politicians think about is the fireside chats by Franklin Roosevelt and the TV appearances by Ronald Reagan, especially after the shuttle explosion, where they're really in a conversation with you. They're really human. It's real person to person. And so I think that second half of his acceptance speech was much more effective than the first half.
I guess the real question coming out of the convention is, do you think voters who might have been on the line, either progressives or more centrist Republicans, do you think this was a convention that really spoke to them?
When you want to win an election, you're doing two sort of different messages. On the one hand, you're doing base mobilization. In other words, you're exciting the people who already support you to get out and vote. To get them really motivated. And then there's a very different activity by a campaign, and that's called persuasion. Persuasion meaning addressing the undecideds or the not yet decided if they're even going to vote. And so the four nights of the convention, I think, were more oriented towards the undecideds and towards persuasion than it was to exciting the base. Because for the Democratic Party, as well as for the Republican Party this year, the base is already mobilized. And so they were trying to draw contrast with the president without it being too much of a single-note convention. You know, when we think back to Hillary Clinton's campaign, we sort of falsely repackaged the memory that she presented herself to the nation as saying, I'm not Trump. And that's a good enough reason for everybody to vote for me. And so what this the convention tried to do is they tried to criticize Trump, but sort of with sort of more specificity without just four nights of just bashing him. And I think it really came to a head, that tone, was with the last moderator, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I thought of the four moderators was fabulous because she used humor to poke fun at Pence and Trump. And I thought that humor and lightheartedness would be much more effective with the undecideds in terms of persuasion than, you know, just sort of, we don't like Trump, we don't like Trump. So that, I think, was a plus. Now, there were some lesser moments in the convention. There were a couple of technical glitches. I think a couple of speakers didn't quite hit the impact. I thought Kamala Harris was good and engaging and warm, as she always is, but I don't think she either successfully built a case as the prosecutor, the DA, the attorney general, building the case, here's why Trump is a failed president, nor did she seem to be building the case of, here are all the things that we would do if we win. It just seemed to be that she was introducing herself. She was being nice, as she is in her political career, but not moving the ball very forward. If it comes to sort of who was able to package the message that's not anti-Trump, on the last night, they had a segment of a taped segment with the theme, This Time Next Year. And I thought that that was a winning moment because it was able to get into presenting the party platform, presenting what Democrats and the Biden campaign want to accomplish, without being some long, boring sort of policy wonk discussion of healthcare reform, but rather it was tangible. It was talking to the individual audience, saying, these are the concrete things that we want to do and that would affect your life. Because after all, if a campaign is going to be successful, they really have to get off of sort of mottos and sound bites. They have to talk to the undecided citizen and say, politics is a tangible activity. Your life will be affected if I, you know, fill in the blank, get elected. And so the framing of this time next year was really a good moment. In fact, I sort of wish they had done it for all four nights because that really captured the persuasive message.
Hmm. Well, Mordecai Lee, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your thoughts.
You're welcome. Call anytime.
Mordecai Lee is a political commentator and professor of urban planning at UW-Milwaukee.